Hello, friends. Before we begin today's episode, I'd like to just go ahead and apologize. That means I owe you all a Starburst. Rutherford B. Hayes was elected president in 1876, not Benjamin Harrison. So whatever this crazy guy says later, it was Rutherford B. Hayes, the Compromise of 1877, and the Rutherford B. Hayes presidency. Thank you.
Enjoy the show. Hello, and welcome to H-Town Rewind. This is Josh.
And David.
And we are history teachers in the greater Houston area, and this is our podcast about the history of Houston.
All things Houston.
And how do we find Houston, David?
However we want to. We're adults, Josh. Let's go with Sugarland.
I think Sugarland might come up today.
What about Richmond?
Richmond will come up today.
Rosenberg?
Rosenberg might come up.
Dallas? Dallas will never come up on this show unless we're mocking it.
Oh,
that joke will never get old.
President Kennedy, you should just stay. You would have a good time.
Just one more night in Houston.
Okay. All right. And today, I'm just going to tell us the title real quick, David, and you'll give us some context. We're doing something, a very tragic thing with a very silly name, the Jay Bird Woodpecker War. The name is funny. The story is not.
Sorry, I was laughing about the pudding pops. Sorry to interrupt.
So, David, this story takes place in the late 1880s in what is now a suburb of Houston, Fort Bend County. And before we talk about this story, can you give us a little context about what Reconstruction is and what it looks like?
I would love to. So, Reconstruction was the effort to rebuild the Union after the Civil War ended. So, look, 1865 to 1877, historians agree, Reconstruction technically and, you know, by law ended in 1877 when Harrison, not Rutherford B. Hayes, but Benjamin Harrison was elected president. And this was on the promise of federal troops being removed from three states, Florida, South Carolina, and Louisiana. And once that these states would enact a state constitution that allowed for African Americans to vote, then federal troops would be withdrawn. And Reconstruction would be over. And this sideline deal is what Benjamin Harris elected in 1876. And, you know, we call this the Compromise of 1877. So, 1877, right? Everybody's paying attention to these numbers. We're talking 1865 to 1877. This is a 12-year period where federal troops will mandate that African Americans have the right to vote. They are citizens and they enjoy all the same liberties that every other American who pays taxes gets to enjoy. So that's Reconstruction in a nutshell. But again, we're not talking about 1877, are we, Josh?
No, we're talking about 1888 to 89.
So Reconstruction, again, legally and by all accounts, is over with. So what happens in 1889?
Well, let me back up just a little bit. Fort Bend County, as many southern areas have, because of Reconstruction, have African-American senators, congressmen, sheriffs. And actually, Fort Bend County had the first, in the United States history, African-American sheriff. His name was Walter Moses Burton, and he has the glory to be the first African-American sheriff in U.S. history.
And an awesome name. I mean, Walter Moses, that's
Burton.
Cool.
Yeah. No, great. There's going to be some great names in this story. There's going to be some great names. Now, Fort Bend County is a little bit about the demographics. It's about 80% black. Okay?
Okay. This is 1880?
Yeah, it's probably true right after the Civil War as well. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's about 80% black, which means 20% white. The cat is on the stove. Sorry about that, folks.
Sorry, guys. The cat's a bit extra today, so
yeah.
Apologize right now.
He's excited for having a guest over. And he's excited to hear from you all.
Leave your comments down below.
But like you said, Reconstruction, quote-unquote, ends. But in Fort Bend County, something interesting happens. I can't figure out why. Because it's 80% black.
Josh, so understand that the political landscape at the time, what you just said, there are numerous African Americans in elected positions. Not really federal. There are a few federal, but statewide across the South, especially in Texas, we have African Americans that are being elected to positions they've never been able to attain.
Yes. And in most of the South, that ends when Reconstruction ends.
Sad fact.
But not Fort Bend County. Fort Bend County still has many, many African-American local officials. And they have some support from the middle and lower class white population.
Sounds similar to the thinking during the Civil War. Go ahead.
Sorry, but they're still doing their thing. You have a lot of African-American leaders in Fort Bend County, which of course means many, many of the 20% white people are unhappy.
Well, yeah, okay, all right.
So, we're talking about the people that used to own the slaves.
We are talking about previous slave owners that now have these giant plantations that were worked the entire time, and this whole second-class citizenship that has been the accepted norm.
But Fort Bend County is really doing well. There are, half the officials are white, half the officials are black, because the black leaders do something very smart. They intentionally nominate white leaders half the time.
Kind of like they reach across the aisle.
They reach across the aisle.
Nice.
And so two factions start to build up. I'm not going to say the good guys, but the good guys.
Can I interrupt real quick?
Please.
You said factions, man, so I got to go back to my Federalist Papers. This was warned about. Once we see factions, we start seeing problems. Sorry to interrupt.
We do. And the problem is these former slave owners who want to be back in charge like it's the good old days. So two factions start, and they have a very silly name. The Jaybirds are the former slave owners. They want to be back in charge.
Right.
The Woodpeckers are everybody else.
Why are they called Woodpeckers?
It's so stupid. Okay, so there was a African-American folk singer named Bob Chappell who lived in the area.
Oh, Bobby Chappell.
And the references have been lost to history. I'm sure there was like some inside joke, but he was always singing about Jaybirds and Woodpeckers.
Okay.
And that's it. That's how they got these.
We
got
to find some audio.
Well, it's 1880s, so I don't think we're going to. So tensions start to rise, and it starts in the summer of 1889, June 2nd. There is a woodpecker named Kyle Terry. He's the tax assessor.
Wait, real quick. I just want to reestablish what you just said.
Yes.
When we say Jaybird, we mean what?
The bad guys.
When we say woodpecker, we mean what?
The relatively less bad guys.
Okay.
Yes, the slightly less racist ones.
Okay.
The woodpeckers are actually a combination of whites and blacks.
Okay.
The Jaybirds are only the rich white guys.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
So, I don't mean to put in good guy, bad guy terms, but...
Not all the world was black and white.
Once you see this story, there are clearly good guys and bad guys. And the Jaybirds are not the good guys. All right, so here's what happens. In the summer of 89, June... the tax assessor, who is a woodpecker, Kyle Terry, kills someone named Gibson. And then Gibson, who is a Jaybird, is in turn killed by someone named Volney Gibson. I told you there'd be good names.
Volney.
That name needs to come back. That's in June.
David Volney Kelly.
Things start to escalate immediately. So there's going to be there's a big meeting with the Jaybirds. And they basically make threats to all certain black leaders to get out of Dodge. Some of them do, some of them don't. Some of them are going to stay. It's about to get very ugly.
I would like to know more about those that chose to stay.
Well, we know, because, spoiler alert, the Jaybirds win, some of these records have been expunged.
Well, yeah, that's a clever way of saying it.
All right, so the Jaybirds, actually, I'm going back up a little more to 1887. The Jaybird Democratic Association is founded, and they immediately start doing what you've seen already happen in other parts of the South, which is disenfranchise the blacks. Let's just call it what it is. So, here's where it gets really weird. Summer of 89, so we're going to skip to the next year. Everyone is a Democrat on paper. There are no Republicans anymore.
Right.
The only reason the Woodpeckers have been able to stay in power is because they nominally say they're Democrats.
Right.
All right. So, which means whoever wins the Democratic primary is going to win whatever office is up for grabs. So, the primaries. The Jaybirds fight to keep the Woodpeckers out of the primaries. And you'd say, how can they do that? What about the 14th Amendment? What about the 15th Amendment? Right?
I was going to go fourth due process, but sure.
Absolutely. Here's their argument in court, and it holds up. It's a private organization, the Democratic Party.
Oh.
So they can exclude whoever they want.
It's a private party. It's a social club.
Yes, of course.
Oh. You can't see this, But I'm shaking my fist right now. Oh.
All right, so election day comes up, August. The Woodpeckers just run under the Woodpecker title. And guess what? Because 80% plus of the population is on their side, they win the elections.
I'm with you so far, yeah.
And the Jaybirds are not having any of it.
Okay, so we're 1889.
August.
August, 1889, there is a civil election, and the Woodpeckers take 80% of the field.
They win everything. They win everything up for grabs.
Dominate.
Tax assessor, sheriff, you name it.
Dominate. All right.
Because they are the majority of the county.
Now, guys, let me just real quick kind of explain what Democrats in 1888 are compared to what we understand Democrats in 20 whatever year this is. Democrats were the party of Confederacy, and they were the party of the Confederacy advocacy. They were all about reliving the lost cause. Eric Foner is a historian that came up with the whole precept, which I fall in line with. So Democrats then, in late 19th century, they were all about the reliving the former glory of the Old South. They were all about making sure that these social and cultural norms maintained and were maintained. So yeah, we're gonna wait for the radical Republican to get out of town, and then we're gonna come back and reestablish the social norms that existed in the antebellum South. So things change over time, and clearly they don't change overnight. This is just another example of the evolution of polity, politicism. Sorry to interrupt.
No, thank you for that context. So here's where it gets ugly. There's no other way to say it.
No wants to be in Lindsay.
We're about to talk about the Battle of Richmond. Richmond is the county seat, still is, of Fort Bend County. It is a suburb of Houston at this point, but at the time it's the county seat. So, downtown Richmond. The sheriff is killed. The sheriff's name is Jim Garney. He's a Woodpecker.
He's a Woodpecker.
These names are silly. This story is not. I'm so sorry, folks. He's killed in broad daylight. There's a gentleman who's probably involved named W.T. Eldridge, which we will get to him after the battle. But I am going to read from the Texas Historical Society's website, because they say it so well. So it's August 16th, 1889, and I quote, "An exchange of shots between J.W. Parker and W.T. Wade of the Woodpeckers and Gulf and Volney Gibson of the Jaybirds was the signal of the beginning for the battle. Most of the action took place around the courthouse, the National Hotel, and the McFarland residence. After about 20 minutes of exchange of shots, the Woodpecker combatants retreated to the courthouse and left the Jaybirds in position of the town." This is ridiculous. Back to the quote. "The casualties were heavy. Jaybirds from all parts of the county hurried to Richmond in anticipation of further hostilities, but there was no renewal of the conflict. The Houston Light Guard arrived to establish martial law, and Governor Lawrence Ross and Brenham Light Guards, arrived on August 17th. Governor Ross remained in Richmond several days to act as mediator. A complete reorganization of the county government resulted in the removal or resignation of all Woodpecker officials and the selection of Jaybirds or persons acceptable to the Jaybirds to fill the offices. After a turbulent era of more than 20 years, the white citizenry once again controlled the government." And if I could talk, end quote. And if I could talk about Governor Ross. He is a former Confederate general.
Are we starting to see a trend here, people? Are we starting to see a Confederate trend? Sorry to interrupt.
He sends the Houston Light Guard, which is made up of mostly Confederate veterans.
Who saw that coming?
Texas Rangers, who are probably mostly made up of former Confederate veterans.
We can come back to that in a second.
To keep the peace. Always to keep the peace. So they come up with something called the Peace Committee, which doesn't sound...
it doesn't sound like Soviet Russia at all.
No, it sounds totally on the up and up. Spoiler alert, it's not. They totally hold up what the Jaybirds want. Only their guys can be in the primary.
Hang on. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
This is how I imagine it went. All right, we need a commission to get rid of all the people that we don't want. We need... I can't think of the word. All right, would everybody stop talking? I need some peace and quiet. We could call it the Peace Commission. That's it. That's what we're going to do. We're going to call it the Peace Commission to establish our peace.
Sounds totally on the up and up.
Sounds legit.
So, I'm going to back up in a minute, but I just want to wrap up.
Wait, you're going to back up before you wrap up?
I'm going to do whatever I want. depends on who you ask. Between 7 and 10 people die during this battle. Now, I suspect, because there are no records of the lynchings, that there were probably lynchings, too, that did not make the books.
I'm assuming there were lynchings that followed, yes.
So in 1890, the Texas legislature passes the Jay Bird Primary Association Law.
Oh, my goodness.
Which solidifies the how they run the primaries. Only their guys are allowed in.
Well, you know, the winners write the history, Josh.
Yeah.
As messed up as this is.
And it stood on the books until 1953.
1953?
The Supreme Court ruled it unconstitutional, finally.
Was there something else going on in the 50s?
What else could have been going on in the 50s, David?
Something 1955, Topeka Board of something along those lines. What Josh is, and I am also intoning, is there are specific moments in the 20th century where you see an uptick of civil rights and civil rights legislature. So we're clearly in the 19th century right now, but something happened in 1921, which we found interesting in our research on this. We were looking for census data.
We were, because obviously we assumed there would be some migration of African Americans after this.
Right.
These records are just very hard to find. And David, why are they hard to find?
Well, apparently they were all burned in 1921 in a fire in Richmond at the courthouse.
I'm sure it was just a coincidence.
I'm sure it was a coincidence. 1921 also happens to be right after the presidency of... who is this guy? I can't think of his name. Josh, help me out.
It's alliterative, and you know you can't trust a person with an alliterative name.
No, you can't. There was an uptick in the lost cause mentality in the 1920s, and there was a pushback because of veterans coming back. So, anyway, long story short, 1921, all the records of the demographics... We have the data, guys. We had the data. We had the concept of the data, but in 21, it all burned. So, a lot of this is kind of, now I don't want to say whitewashed, but just kind of washed over. Like, there are a lot of dead ends that we ran into researching this, just for numbers, so that we could give numbers to kind of establish, you know, what we're talking about. And we couldn't, because it was all destroyed.
And I would like to back up to one of the figures I briefly mentioned. Mr. Eldridge.
Oh, W.T. Eldridge?
The man who almost certainly helped kill the sheriff in broad daylight. Did he get his comeuppance, David?
Well, this was my part of the thing. Who is W.T. Eldridge? Well, he's the man that started the whole battle. He killed a man in broad daylight. An elected official of law enforcement in broad daylight. So whenever we say the Jaybirds were the worst or the baddies, I think, can we call them the baddies?
History is full of nuance, but not here.
Are they the baddies?
They're the baddies.
They're the baddies. Eldridge was a big baddie. He found his way into a great fortune with the Kempner estate out of Galveston. They bought a sugar plantation, 20,000 acre sugar plantation that would become Imperial Sugar.
I don't know if Imperial Sugar is a nationwide brand, but they are a big deal in the South.
Okay, so whenever you go to the grocery store and you see the bag of sugar, look to the side of it, it'll say Imperial, at least in the South. I have never not seen Imperial Sugar anywhere. So, well, I don't know how to say this, like, because there's three words I want to say. But I don't want to edit. I don't want Josh to have to do more work than he has to.
We want to keep this, if not for kids, but family friendly at least.
Let's just stay with he was the worst.
He's awful.
He's awful. So much to that. He kind of becomes a running theme in what's awful with Texas Democrats. Because he was a Democrat, and you understand, Texas Democrats, from the period ending Civil War up until, well, Roosevelt, were a completely different party than what's understood today. So I found a pamphlet about this character, W.T. Eldridge.
They tear into him.
So this is a 19-page pamphlet that came out in 1913. 9999919. Sorry. Who is W.T. Eldridge? Now, understand, I'm going to back up and reinforce everything Josh has told us about this horrific event. That was 12 years after the fact of the end of Reconstruction. This is the man who started the whole thing. And what happened to him? He became a pariah, if you will, in Texas history. But who is W.T. Eldridge? In 1913, this is what was said. Who is W.T. Eldridge? Would overturn state constitution, division of the governor's prerogative, the pardoning power, a mammoth trust, a hidden halter for civilization. The amazing consideration which has been accorded to the so-called prison reform plan of one W.T. Eldridge will put the wisdom and sense of responsibility of the governor and legislature of the state of Texas on trial. A man unknown to the public, except through, and I love this word, except through malodorous litigation, suddenly bobs up on the frothy wave of self-advertisement as the proposed Moses of the penal institutions of Texas. This is not a good man. A man who has preferred through the press exceedingly grave charges against the chief executive of the state, exhibits the astounding audacity of seeking the governor's acknowledgement of the truth and justice of those charges, charges to be mentioned later. A man who, under the guise of planning for the state's welfare, plots the establishment of a virtual empire within a republic or state, an empire of the lawless element, with himself as the grand mogul. Such is the situation.
And he's rich. He never suffers any consequences. He has one of the most successful businesses in Texas.
Who doesn't need sugar? As a matter of fact, in 1907, our man Eldridge here reaches out to Cuba because he wants to get Cuban sugar and then bring it to the United States and refine it in... What's a land of sugar?
Sugarland.
Sugarland. Yep. There we go. Mm-hmm. Okay.
This story was not in the Sugarland History Museum when I went, by the way.
Can we talk about the Sugarland History Museum?
I think that's its own episode.
Okay. All right.
But so in 1896, so not even 10 years after the Battle of Richmond, the new city fathers, who are all jaybirds, erect a monument to the victims of the Richmond War.
Okay.
So, I'm quoting now from the Fort Bend Herald. In 1896, this monument was installed on the site to honor J. Birds, J.M. Shamblin, Ned Gibson, and Henry Faust, who died from injuries sustained during the battle. The
monument on June 2nd, right?
There was that one thing at the beginning, and then in August was the big thing.
Okay, so we have a June incident, we have an August incident.
Yes, I'm so sorry for the... Thank you for the clarification.
No.
This monument refers to these jaybirds as our heroes.
I've read them.
This monument stood in a pride of place in Richmond until 3 years ago.
The hell happened 3 years ago?
The locals finally realized, you know what, this isn't a great thing to have in our downtown. So there was a huge push to, like, all right, man, so
Maybe this isn't a thing we should celebrate. Maybe these guys aren't the thing we should celebrate.
I don't want a court controversy, David, but let me say, I know. A few years ago is when all the Confederate monuments were coming down, and you can feel how you want to feel about that. You can say, well, we're honoring people who sacrificed their lives, blah, blah, blah. I don't agree with that, but you can say that, right?
You can say that.
There is no way to justify this monument. This is a monument to white supremacy.
Yeah, it is.
This isn't, we're honoring some heroes.
Well, yeah, it was.
It stayed up until the 2020s. It's now in a historic cemetery where it belongs.
And I believe that there is a nice white picket fence surrounding the cemetery today.
Well, you need probably something more than that to keep people from graffitiing it, which they should do. I don't condone vandalism.
I do.
But in this case, I'm not going to lose any sleep over it.
Jaybirds held a meeting on October 22, 1889, creating the Jaybird Democratic Organization of Fort Bend County,
which stayed in power until 1953. So, we always like to bring this back to today. Context, David, Fort Bend County is a very different place than it was in 1889.
It is wildly different.
Much more diverse. At the time, like we said, it was about 80% African American, which means 20% white. Today, it's about 20% African American. Many people of South Asian descent. Many people from all over the world.
Indonesia.
Yes, it's Indonesia, very diverse.
That blew me away. Like the Indonesian population in Fort Bend County, that's tremendous.
It's one of the fastest growing counties in the United States because it's a suburb of Houston, and Stafford has no city property tax. Just saying, if you're looking for a house.
Yours isn't on the market, just saying. Yeah.
But David, in the broader picture, why do you suppose Fort Bend County held out so long with a mixed representation, black and white?
No social media.
That helps.
Because it's one of those things. It's one of those things that you accept. Think if you're an African American in the 1870s, what is your world like? Like, what is your thought process about the environment and the world around you like? I have no idea, nor can I even possibly understand. But what I can say is there is a culture and a society that's been built around your slavery and the fact that you are not a citizen, you are not a human, and you are not equal to anyone else. That, well, how do you change that overnight? How do you change that overnight?
That's a generational change.
It's a multi-generational change. It's grandparents telling their kids, these are the right decisions that you should make in life. This is the way that you should understand and appreciate people. So, the fact that it happened in 1889 blows me away. Reconstruction was done. The fact that this battle of wills, this battle of integrity is really what it is. This battle of constitutional integrity lasted for 12 years is impressive. And that's what blows me away about this story, is that this struggle clearly existed until the 1950s, clearly existed until the 1960s, and I would debate clearly exists today.
Yeah.
But during Reconstruction, you couldn't just look away from societal and cultural deviances. I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean, like, all of a sudden, you know, one day African Americans can't vote. The next day they can. You know, one day they can't ride on the bus with you. Next day they can. One day they can't ride in the same seat with you. Next day they can.
And I would just add to that, what makes this story extra tragic, in my opinion, African Americans and white people, except for the rich guys, were getting along. It was working in Fort Bend County.
That's what makes this a great story, is that it can happen. It did happen. It happened at 12 years after Reconstruction. It came to a head 12 years after Reconstruction, yes. But it can happen. It can happen in the most dangerous and volatile situation politically and culturally that you can run into. Like, where you're not just afraid for what you think. Clearly, you're afraid for how you look, what color you are, and then how you think. And that's the beauty of this tragedy. It's because violence only happened when it was the idea that needed to be killed. Unfortunately, the men had to be killed behind that idea.
And a huge migration, both not just of African Americans, the first great migration, but also many white citizens who sided with the woodpeckers.
See, okay, the great migration had happened. Like, it had happened. It was over with at that point. These are African Americans and former slaves. Let's call it for what it is, man. These are former slaves who elected on their own volition to stay in this area, to stay in Fort Bend County and make Fort Bend County better. Better through understanding of ideas, better through conversation, better through open and fair and honest elections. Just better.
For a few years it worked.
Yeah.
Until certain people had to have their way.
And our tragedy to our story.
With a very silly name.
I kept really wanting to say, like, did they call each other Woodies? Like, are you a Woody?
I would go with that.
Like, hey,
we got to lighten it up a little bit.
Hey, yeah, okay.
Sorry,
so we're Democrats, and it's 1888, and we're at a Democrat thing, you know, having tea or whatever, and like, hey, how you doing there, Jay? Oh, what do you mean, Woody? I'm like, oh, okay, you're cool. Okay, you're not a Jaybird, you're a Woody.
They probably did something stupid like that.
Everyone does something stupid whenever they're given that chance to. Look at us.
Old-timey slang is weird. Well, friends, my name is Josh.
And I'm David.
This has been H-Town Rewind. If you have any questions, concerns, feedback, we have an email address, htownrewind@gmail.com, all one word. If you have an idea for an episode, we will hear you out if you have any feedback whatsoever.
I would also like to add that I opened up the other email account. We are also available at 419-384-G5@compuserve.com. So go ahead and email us at either one that you feel comfortable with.
Maybe just H-Town Rewind.
Okay, well, I'm just saying, you know, not everyone has, Gmail. I am bringing levity. It's a great story. It's a sad story.
This was a heavy one.
And I'm bringing some levity at the end. Sorry, mate.
All right, friends. Have a good day.
Bye. Thank you. And you better not squabble. And you better not fight. Best proper will arrest you. Hit it, boom, and take it down. You can bet your bottom dollar that you're a sugar land bound.